Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today we are talking about what's going on with the consumer banking. We know on a Monday we tend to focus on consumer issues, and for today we are looking at what's going on in the what some might refer to as entry-level banking, but like what's going on as a way for us to sort of get an idea of some of the pressures that are being felt by consumers during these, to use an oft-used term, unprecedented times. And we're going to be talking to the team from First National Bank, that's FNB, around some of the trends that they're seeing around consumer spending and saving. To sort of help us to unpack these issues, we are joined on the line by Pilani Potwana, who is the FNB Easy CEO, together with Robert Gwerengwe, who is the FNB Gold CEO, to unpack these issues. Gents, good morning to you. How are you?
All right, Mudiwa. How are you doing?
No, doing all right. Pilani, I'll just start with you. Just on the side of FNB Easy, could you give us an idea of what that actually looks like, the type of clients and banking customers that you are taking care of in your segment?
Okay, great. Good morning to everyone, and thanks for having me. So I look after the customer segment for income between 0 to 120,000 per annum. That, of course, includes our underbanked or unbanked market. As you guys know, the product we've been playing there, I mean, a household name, is our e-wallet product. So simplistically, I look after the client value proposition, which, I mean, the way I see it, it includes three parts, right? The one is, we have to determine, what financial solutions do we position in this market, to address our clients' financial needs. This ranges from, the day-to-day transactional products our clients use to their insurance needs, savings needs, as well as their investment needs. And then the second thing is, of course, the positioning. I mean, this is absolutely important, right? Because, the tone, the language, how we simplify our products for our clients is absolutely important. And for me, this space is so unique because I believe our clients always need us to hold their hands a little bit more. And then the last thing that we look after is just the client experience, specifically the service model. And as you know, we've got a couple of channels, whether digital channels or our traditional branches, where we assist clients. It's important that, we determine where our clients need to go for what. So, for instance, if a client wants to buy prepaid airtime, we talk to them that, our digital channels are available, which is typically USSD or our banking app. And then for the more, complex financial needs for them, we always recommend that they go to their nearest branch so they can have a proper conversation with one of our consultants. So simplistically, that's what we look after in this segment.
Thank you for that, Pilani. Robert, turning to you, can you give us a flavor of, FNB Gold?
Yeah, thanks, Mudiwa. And good morning to your listeners. Thanks for having me. So in terms of FNB Gold, from an income perspective, my segment looks after customers that earn between 120,000 Rand and 300,000 Rand per year. So I guess if you went to other financial institutions, those would be referred to as sort of going entry into middle market. And those are the customers that we look after. And much like Pilani has at length sort of explain the role we play as segments, it is the same in Gold as well. So it's really around understanding our customers, making sure we are the advocates for customers within the rest of the bank to ensure that the solutions that we produce and land in the market and the way we land them in the market resonates with those customers, to ensure that when customers are going through tough times, much like today with the COVID pandemic, that we understand the trends, we understand those needs that the customers have, And we can therefore be part of shaping the right solutions to help our customers. I mean, a great example is with the COVID relief loans that we offered into the market, which we certainly think were the best and most customer-centric solution in the market. We're very proud of that. And there was a lot of collaboration across the bank, but also a lot of input from the sub-segments around just what customers require at this time.
Now, Robert, as a follow-up to you, could you give us a sense of what the spending and saving patterns have been in your segment, that 120 to 300,000 range you're talking about? My back of the napkin sort of calculation has me sitting at around 20 to 30,000 rand a month or so in terms of what people might be earning on average on the higher end of that segment. What are some of the things that you've seen?
So quite right, Mdio. So the income range is between 10 and 25K per month. And what we've seen, particularly with the COVID pandemic, is that there's obviously a lower level of confidence in consumers in general. And I mean, that's no different in our customer base. And where there's less confidence, those that have the ability to spend generally hold. And then there's the negative impact of people also losing their jobs, and therefore that impacts spending patterns. So what we're seeing is people are cutting back to the basic stuff that they require. So from a food perspective, we see that that's still going as probably in line with pre-COVID numbers. But in terms of, I guess, the more luxury type shopping for clothes, all of that has fallen quite dramatically over this period. I guess people are losing their jobs, and even those that have jobs aren't sure about whether or not they will have jobs through the pandemic. So I think it's characterized by a lot more conservative spend by individuals. We're seeing it in the market, and we're certainly seeing it in our customers.
Conservative spend, I'm sure that's a theme that is likely to be seen across the board. Pilani, in your segment, is the story the same, or are you sort of seeing something different?
Absolutely, it's the same story. And in fact, one of the things that we've looked at is just the income movement. I mean, if we look at Feb versus, let's say, June, we've seen a drop of around 30% of our clients' income, which is huge on average, right? Which talks to, you know, a couple of things, but one of them being that we've seen a lot of clients lose their income within this space. If I compare what happened in Feb versus May and sort of June and July, we are actually seeing that 10. So for instance, this month we are seeing 20% to 15% down compared to what we saw in Feb, which again talks to the fact that, you know, the economy is starting to run again. A lot of our clients are back at work, which is really good. But overall, I mean, if I just compare Feb and June, the drop on average is around 1,250 in as far as our client income is concerned, which is big, it's huge. But if I look at the spend and savings, just comparing Feb and June again, we've seen a big drop in debit orders, as well as our fee income and cash withdrawals. And again, that talks to the fact that, you know, there was little to no activity in as far as our clients are concerned. And what we've actually seen, the opposite, is that we've seen an increase in card purchases, an increase in, you know, prepaid airtime and data, as well as just, you know, electronic payments on our digital channels, which again talks to, you know, some of the strategies we've been pushing over the last couple of months. And one of the things, you know, we've always believed our clients needed to adopt from a banking perspective is, you know, the usage of our digital channel, just given how cheap and cost effective they are. And lastly, I mean, if we just split the category of spend, we've definitely seen a drop in savings and investments. If we compare Feb and June, we've seen a drop in fuel spend, which again talks to the fact that, you know, a lot of our clients are sitting at home and there's been limited movement. But what's interesting We've actually seen an increase in groceries and household spend. I mean, we are looking at a 16% increase between Feb and June. We are looking at a 19% increase in pharmacies, well-being type of spend, and a 31% increase in funeral services spend, which is interesting and again talks to, I guess, what we've been seeing in the news and what we've been, you know, witnessing over the last couple of months, given COVID-19.
Now, based on some of those data points you've just mentioned, the fact that you're seeing some of the grocery spending up 16% and the wellness products on the pharmacy side, Robert, you had started talking to us earlier on just around some of the solutions. How have some of these data points that, you know, Pilani is touching on right now, how has that sort of informed some of the solutions that you guys have come up with to assist, you know, your clients to actually cope during this time? And what are some of the interventions you guys have come up with?
Yeah, thanks, Mdil. So I think just looking at our customers' financial positions, the biggest issue and biggest angst point they would have had at the start of the pandemic is really around the ability to repay their debts. So within our customer base, we obviously have customers that have personal loans, have credit cards, some have home loans and vehicle finance. And obviously the angst around if I don't pay, then traditionally that may lead to position or legal action. So our efforts were focused around safeguarding that, which is a combination of the customer's financial position as well as the customer's assets. And that's where we really, really put our energy. So the first solution we put together was just a customer-centric way of covering payments for the customer for 3 months. So what we did in effect is where other banks would probably have said, go and negotiate per product you have with each division in the bank. So for example, if you have a home loan and a credit card and a personal loan, you would have had to go and make 3 phone calls at the same bank to try and get, I guess, 3 solutions for yourself as a customer. We said, well, we see you as a customer who happens to have multiple relationships with us as a bank. So we are going to solve for you once. So we created a facility, which we then funded that facility at prime. Again, a big difference to what the rest of the market did, because typically a personal loan is at least 2 to 3 times prime. But we are funding this relief at prime, because our view is that this is not the time to be trying to make money as a bank. It's really around safeguarding our customers and safeguarding the relationship we have with those customers. So that pre-funded account then would cover 3 months of installments for the customer. So in terms of the credit bureau record, the customer would not have any negative information around that. And obviously, we would then structure a repayment on that facility of up to 5 years. So if you can pay it off much quicker, then that's great. But if it takes you a bit longer, that's also okay. But for as long as we were able to take away that angst for our customers. And that was really the big focus point. We also then added a credit life insurance to this facility for free. So again, should you lose your job in whilst you're paying off this facility at no extra cost, for example, we'll cover retrenchment and a few other possible eventualities. So for us, that was really the key. And then also, I mean, you'd have seen we started a partnership on eBucks with Clicks, which particularly for the customers that Pilani and I look after is really a big part of our customers' lives. And that means when you swipe your card there, you get up to 15% back in eBucks, which you can decide whether you buy fuel, you can spend at Clicks again. And we've seen, I guess, with this data coming through, that the relationships that we have and the partnerships we've created are really the ones that are the most important for our customers and help us to continue to put back money into customers' pockets. Because at this time, rewards such as getting 15% back from Clicks become much, much bigger, given the fact that there's this uncertainty about income, and there are lots of people that are losing their jobs.
Pilani, your take on some of the interventions Robert has gone through, quite a number. Has there been any challenges in terms of actually informing clients about all the different options that are available to them, and are people actually taking up some of the interventions? Are they actually taking them up to say, okay, fine, FNB is offering this, I'm actually going to take it on with me?
No, absolutely. Look, our clients have responded very well. We do acknowledge that in the beginning, we had a lot of clients that didn't quite understand how client-centric our solution was, and that actually we had their best interest at heart. And I think for me, the starting point is always, I mean, I have to look at, you know, what is at the center of our strategy. And I mean, I look at this across both the segments that certainly myself and Rob look after. I mean, at the center is that we are trying to be a trusted money manager. And this trust topic is something that all of us are quite passionate about, because it's important that our clients understand, you know, our heart, our approach to helping them solve their financial needs, and that, you know, we've got their best interest at heart. And I think if I just reflect on, outside of, I guess, COVID-19 and some of the financial strain our clients have been under, there's something we call money management within this bank, which is really the underpin of us being a trusted money manager. I mean, the first thing we spend a lot of time looking at, you know, what are the top three, top five financial goals for our clients, or top three, top five reasons for financial impact. And based on that client understanding, that's how we've crafted our value props. And I mean, you would have realized or would have seen a couple of weeks ago, we announced that we aren't increasing our bank fees, headline fees, which is the monthly fees. I mean, that is us responding to the pressure that we feel and see our clients are under. But if you look at some of the key things, you know, in our value props, I mean, one of them is we've realized our clients, especially in this space, are spending a lot of their money worrying or supporting a family member, extended family, worrying about kids' education and those kind of things. And we've then made a decision to say we will give away two free e-wallet sends for our clients. And I mean, that's a big saving for our clients, just given the number of e-wallet sends that our clients tend to do. We've also just recently zero-rated prepaid purchases, you know, for airtime, data, and electricity. Those are going to be free going forward. And we've also, a couple of years ago, we decided that we are going to zero-rate our app usage, so our clients can get into our app whether they have airtime, data, or they don't. We don't charge them for that. And if you look at some of our key value props in this space, we've got free card swipes. And from 1 July, one of the things we've done is we've zero-rated cash at till, which simply means that, you know, our clients, when they go to their grocery store, they can swipe for free and request or withdraw cash at till for free. And we believe that, you know, these are some of the things that are in direct response to, you know, what we believe our clients need, certainly at this time.
I want to switch over to something that you spoke about earlier on, and it sort of connects to what you've just spoken about in terms of the app usage and the zero rating and stuff like that. And it's around digital banking, because FNB in the last, maybe 5 years, decade, has actually been had that reputation of, you know, being a digital focused sort of financial institution. So I think you guys, you know, do provide an interesting viewpoint just around what digital banking adoption has looked like over this lockdown period, because, you know, we've seen the World Health Organization discouraging the use of cash. You know, people unable to actually go to ATMs and do physical withdrawals and stuff like that. So that sort of shift to digital, Pilani, do you see that as a fundamental shift in the way that South Africans just do all their banking, that from this, you know, from this point forward, that we're likely going to just see the majority digital banking sort of culture? Or is this something that's likely to be, you know, just for the time?
No, it is. We've always, if you look at just the banking behavior of this space, I mean, just over 60% of our clients are fully entrenched on a digital channel. And it's been mostly a USSD type channel. But what we've seen, we've actually seen a shift around from USSD as a channel into our banking app. And this coincidentally aligns to us launching a sub app, if you may call it, for clients who earn less than 180,000. So we've done some changes to our app. We've made it simpler. It's more intuitive. It's aligned to the look and feel of what you would typically see if you log on to USSD. And we did that, you know, in response to what some of our clients have been asking for us. So, I mean, we've got a great, great app at the moment, and we are seeing the adoption there. It's increasing daily. It's impressive. And the feedback we are getting from our clients is that they understand what we are positioning to them. They like the look and feel. And just from a numbers perspective, I mean, who would have thought that, you know, this client base would be so comfortable with the app? We've seen absolute value increase of about 6-7% just over the last 4 months, 5 months, in as far as this app usage is concerned, which means that, you know, more and more clients are going to be comfortable with our digital channels. And it does help. And I mean, one of the things that we did last year is we decided that, you know, clients in this space don't always have airtime, which means if they are trying to use the app and they get stuck, we actually have a toll-free number into our service suite, which means they can phone us for free. So I mean, that is such a powerful value prop for our clients, we believe.
Robert, your take on the matter, and in answering that, I think we've heard a lot around what the digital revolution would do to traditional ways of operating and doing business, that, you know, physical retail banking locations are going to die. A lot of doom and gloom and a lot of predictions around that. Are banking halls dead?
I'll answer that in two parts. So in terms of what we've seen over COVID, over this COVID period, we certainly have seen a surge in the utilization in the gold base, particularly of the app. We were making great progress before COVID and lots of efforts by the teams to ensure that it was an offering that was well understood and well articulated. So our customers were taking it up. But as soon as the pandemic started, lockdown started, we saw a sort of 20% jump in the utilization of our app. And typically what we find is that once a customer starts using our app or the digital channels, they don't go back to the traditional way of banking. So it's really around just ensuring that we can get customers to have a taste of our app and digital channels. And then we can ensure that that is sustained. So to answer your first question, I really think it is something that will be a change forever, as opposed to post-COVID, whenever that is, trends going back to what they were. And now, just in terms of whether or not banking halls are dead, I don't think so. I think it does mean that you got to look at your real estate a little bit differently, figure out exactly what you use the real estate for, how big the branches that you have should be, or how big do they need to be. I mean, if we just look at some of the overseas operators that have been there for years and years and years and some decades, you see that even with digital adoption being pretty much 100% in the likes of the UK, you still do have banking halls. It's just around the utilization of those. So that's my view on the South African market as well. I do think it's really just around how to utilize the space we have. And also given the fact that, you know, there are some customers that for certain transactions would still prefer to go into the branch. And so we will have that footprint into the future.
I think that also, you know, sort of helps me to get into, you know, what your outlook is for this particular sector. One, on the consumer side, well, where do you sort of see those trends going? And at the same time, you know, I'd be keen to, you know, get your thoughts, the evolution of the banking hall. You know, where do you think that conversation is going to go? What type of uses are we going to be having? Like, are banking halls going to be strictly for maybe if someone wants to get in touch with maybe a financial planner or maybe going into a bank just so that you can get some type of a tutorial around how the app works? You know, how do you see that conversation evolving, Robert?
Yeah, so I think in terms of trends that I expect around our customers, I mean, we've already started seeing through COVID an increase in sales of insurance products. So I guess a pandemic like this reminds people of their own mortality, and also you start asking yourself questions around, you know, if I was in this position, how would things look? So in terms of funeral policies and all that, which are probably the best priced in the market, those have been selling. And my expectation is also as the economy continues to open up, as Pilani has highlighted already, we are seeing those numbers tick up. And confidence gets restored, I think a big shift we'll see is that more people will save. I think that saving for a rainy day, you know, this experience, I guess, has shown people that those rainy days do happen in your lifetime, regardless of your circumstances. So those are part of the, I guess, key trends that I expect to continue to grow. And also, I think customers will continue to be more digitally engaged with their banks. I don't see customers going back to predominantly getting up to go into the branch. A lot of the people that I guess had fear were almost fear of the digital channels were almost forced into utilizing them, and after utilizing them have become comfortable that it is a safe, secure way of banking. And actually the safest and most secure and most cost effective way of doing it. So those are the trends that we see continuing. With our focus strategically on money management, we again expect our customers to get even more value out of the banking relationship we have with them, because we are starting to put a lot more focus on ensuring that we're having the right conversations with our customers to help them build up their for their financial future. So I think that's the one. And in terms of banking halls, I think what we're seeing is a lot of the almost low value type transactions that were happening in banking halls, customers are very comfortable to do on the app. So, I mean, we still would have customers going to the branch because they've forgotten their credit card PIN, for example, where obviously you can get this on the app within seconds. You don't need to get into a taxi or into your car. And those types of transactions are definitely going to be out of the branches, but they're still some high value conversations that will happen. You'll still find individuals that have, call it three or four products, and they want to holistically switch their relationship into F&B, and they want to talk to someone around it. Those types of interactions, even though they're going to reduce, I think will continue into the future in our banking halls. And also we have, I guess, the advantage of being part of quite a big group, which has, you know, in terms of brands, you've got, obviously you've got F&B, you've got RMB, you've got West Bank, you've got Direct Access. There are a few. And then in that, you've got business banking, corporate banking. So those resources which belong to FirstRand will also be utilized across the group, as opposed to purely on F&B. So I think that will mean that from a sustainability perspective, that obviously is enhanced if you look at the buildings and then the area. But we will probably be looking at having smaller branches, because you don't need as much space, because our expectation is that there'll be fewer people coming through.
No. Thank you so much, Robert, for that. Pilani, you have the final word on this conversation.
Thanks, Modiwa. Look, I mean, I fully agree with Rob. And I mean, I think the one thing I just want to highlight, I mean, we see our branches as playing a very strategic role in our communities. And I mean, I just think back to where I grew up in Mount Frere and Matatiel, and just how the people there, when they look at the F&B branch, certainly, I mean, they see that as their home for a banking relationship. I mean, to the point that a lot of our clients, when they walk into the nearest branch, they know exactly who they want to talk to, and they know our staff members by name, just given, you know, how relationships typically are. So it's very important that, you know, to the extent that, you know, we still have these branches, we leverage them as much as possible. And I think going back to just the financial goals I was talking about, I mean, a lot of our clients say to us, you know, saving for children's education is a top financial goal. The second one would typically be, you know, they want to spend less and they want us to help them not waste money. The third one would be, you know, paying off debt. And if you look at all three, those typically need a conversation with one of our consultants within our branches or via the contact center. But we have tried to assist as much as possible, leveraging our digital channels, specifically the app. But we see these kind of, you know, conversations happening within our branches. And that's why for us, it's important that, you know, whatever interaction we have with our clients, especially the face-to-face ones, we help the clients as much as possible. And we are quite passionate about, you know, helping our clients spend less than they earn. We are quite passionate about helping our clients save on fees. I did talk about how we've improved our value propositions, how we are saving clients money, how we are giving away free stuff within our value propositions.
So that was us with Pilani Potwana, who is the CEO of F&B Easy, together with Robert Gwerengwe, who is the CEO of F&B Gold, just giving us some insights into what, you know, banking is looking like, you know, for the income group 0 to 120, 120 to, you know, 300,000 rand a year, what, you know, what that is actually looking like. Some key takeaways. We have Pilani just talking about the fact that he thinks this is marking a very big fundamental shift in the way that people do their banking, to sort of migrating more towards digital channels. F&B has, you know, been pushing its digital channels for a number of years. And he actually says that this is a moment in which they've actually seen a lot of adoption, and that this adoption is likely to be, you know, some something that's going to be here to stay. At the same time, Robert, just highlighting the fact that, you know, with all the uncertainty that's going on in and around the different income groups, what is, you know, likely certain is that there's going to be a more sort of savings type of culture that is going to be inculcated in the population because of the wake-up call that has been COVID-19. And both just sort of sounding off on the issue of digital banking, you know, both, you know, highlighting the fact that for some of the more low-level tasks when it comes to banking, people are likely to just shift all of that to digital channels such as banking apps. But there's still a place for banking halls, particularly for some of the more important relationships and high-level transactions that need to take place. So thank you so much to the team from FNB for taking their time to just talk to us for today.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Fascinating discussion coming through from the team at FNB. And for me personally, there are a couple of things that sort of stand out to me. The first one being, you know, as a technology geek myself, the issue of digital banking, you know, fintech is something that I keep a close eye on. And it's been quite cool and quite interesting to see what COVID-19 has actually done in terms of adoption of fintech and, you know, some of those products, because the big problem that fintechs have traditionally faced in South Africa is the issue of you know, mass adoption or critical mass, because most of the time you have this solution, that platform, that other platform, and too many fragmented platforms, and people just don't join, or people just have, you know, digital bank, they already have traditional banking products and they don't really need it. But COVID-19, because it's increased the amount of online transactions and retail and commerce that's going on the one end, at the same time people haven't been able to go out to all the locations that they normally would, has forced people to adopt digital payments and digital banking tools. And I think that's really good in terms of innovations, and it certainly does help for us to reimagine what some of the spaces that have traditionally been held by, let's say, what Robert and Pilani referred to as the low-level transactions, maybe transforming some of those spaces into, you know, higher-level sort of institutions. Because if you think about the job of a traditional bank teller, for example, it's much easier said than done, and maybe I'm a bit crazy for saying this, but perhaps we can have a place where we reimagine what the role of a bank teller is. For example, if a bank teller, we upskill them to sort of become more of financial planners or analysts that can actually help clients to maybe invest their money or plan their finances, as opposed to simply, you know, sort of doing the sort of day-to-day transactions. I think it certainly does help to take a lot of conversations forward, and it also then helps to, you know, enrich a set of people that have traditionally, you know, been bank tellers, you know, upskilling them to have, you know, a high level role. And you don't have to lose jobs, because most of the time when it comes to digital adoption, we always talk about what effect that's going to have with the converse or inverse, where you see an erosion of the traditional employment opportunities. But my argument is that if you reimagine what the, if you take a where if you let the digital channels take care of the lower level issues and transactions, and then you increase the skill level of your tellers, they don't have to, you know, lose their jobs. And at the same time, by upskilling them, there's a potential to be earning, you know, more money, which is better for the households that they support. So, you know, very good on that end. The other interesting point was some of the interventions that Pilani and Robert were talking about, particularly around fees. Because if you think about a bank, if ever there was an institution that is there to make money. It is a bank. So when a bank sort of talks about how they've reduced fees or waived fees for certain type of transactions, it really doesn't seem like much. But when you then think about it within the context of how big some of the customer bases are and the level of transactions that are happening on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis in some of these institutions, then it sort of speaks and gives you some insight into how big of a portion of revenues some of these fees actually are for banks. For them to actually be talking about the fact that they've waived some of the fees, it means that these are some of the big revenue earners for them, and it sort of helps you to understand how, you know, the volumes that are driven from some of these seemingly minor transaction fees that we're paying on a daily basis actually go and feed into the bottom lines of these financial institutions. On the whole, they're a very good discussion, and we just hope that you know, more and more banks are doing their part to help to support their clients. So with that, we've come to the end of today's episodes. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.